himself. You care nothing for the light. You care only for power, Mirren. You honestly want me to believe that you've changed?
You do not know me so well as you think that you do, she said, watching him as he rounded the perimeter of her prison. You never did.
Then prove it to me, Rand said, stopping. Show me your mind, Mirren. Open it to me completely. Give me control over you here in this place of mastered dreams. If your intentions are pure, I will free you.
What you ask is forbidden, Rand laughed.
When has that ever stopped you?
She seemed to consider it. She must actually have been worried about her imprisonment. Once she would have laughed at a suggestion such as this. Since this was ostensibly a place where he had complete control, if she gave him leave, he could strip her down, delve within her mind.
I,
Lanfear said. He stepped forward, right to the lip of the prison. That tremble in her voice. That felt real. The first genuine emotion from her.
Light, he thought, searching her eyes. Is she actually going to do it?
I cannot, she said. I cannot.
She said it the second time, more softly. Rand exhaled. He found his hand shaking. So close to the light, like a feral cat in the night, stalking back and forth before the firelit barn. He found himself angry, angrier than before. Always she did this, flirting with what was right, but always choosing her own path. I am done with you, Mirren, Rand said, turning away and walking from the chamber. Forever.
You mistake me, she called out. You have always mistaken me. Would you show yourself to someone in that way? I cannot do it. I have been slapped too many times by those I should have trusted, betrayed by those who should have loved me.
You blame this on me?
Rand asked, spinning on his heel. She did not look away. She sat imperious, as if her prison were a throne.
You really remember it that way, don't you? Rand said. You think I betrayed you for her?
You said that you loved me.
I never said that. Never. I could not. I did not know what love was. Centuries of life, and I never discovered it until I met her.
He hesitated, then continued, speaking so softly his voice did not echo in the small cavern. You have never really felt it, have you? But of course, who could you love? Your heart is claimed already by the power you so strongly desire. There is no room left. Rand let go. He let go as Luz Theron never had been able to. Even after discovering Ilyena, even after realizing how Lanfear had used him, he had held on to hatred and scorn. You expect me to pity you? Rand had asked her. He now felt just that. Pity for a woman who had never known love, a woman who would not let herself know it. Pity for a woman who could not choose a side other than her own.
I,
she said softly. Rand raised his hand, and then he opened himself to her. His intentions, his mind, his self appeared as a swirl of color, emotions and power around him. Her eyes opened wide as the swirl played before her, like pictures on a wall. He could hold nothing back. She saw his motives, his desires, his wishes for mankind. She saw his intentions, to go to Shale Ghul, to kill the Dark One, to leave a better world than he had the last time. He did not fear revealing these things. He had touched the true power, and so the Dark One knew his heart. There were no surprises here. At least nothing that should have been a surprise. Lanfear was surprised anyway. Her jaw dropped as she saw the truth. The truth that, deep down, it was not Luz Theron who made up Rand's core. It was the sheepherder, raised by Tam. His lives played out in moments, his memories and feelings exposed. Last, he showed her his love for Ilyena, like a glowing crystal set upon a shelf and admired. Then his love for Min, Avienda, Elaine, like a burning bonfire, warming, comforting, passionate. There was no love for Lanfear in what he exposed. Not a sliver. He had squelched Luz Theron's loathing of her as well. And so to him she really was nothing. She gasped. The glow around Rand faded. "I'm sorry," he said. "I really did mean it. I am finished with you, Mieren. Keep your head down during the storm to come. If I win this fight, you will no longer have reason to fear for your soul. There will be no one left to torment you." He turned from her again and walked from the cave, leaving her silent. Evening in the Brame Wood was accompanied by the scent of fires smoldering in their pits and the sounds of men groaning softly as they settled into uneasy sleep, swords ready at hand. An unnatural chill to the summer air. Perrin walked through the camp, among the men under his command. The fighting had been hard in these woods. His people were herding the Trollocs, but light, there always seemed to be more Shadowspawn to replace those that fell. After seeing that his people were properly fed, that the watch had been set, and the men knew what to do if awakened in the night by an assault of Shadowspawn, he went seeking the Aiel, the Wise Ones in particular. Nearly all of them had gathered to go with Rand when he marched on Sheol Ghul, for now they waited his order. But a few had remained with Perrin, including Adara. She and the other Wise Ones did not march at his command. And yet, like Gaul, they stayed with him when their fellows went elsewhere. Perrin had not asked them why. He didn't really care why. Having them with him was useful, and he was grateful. The Aiel let him pass their perimeter. He found Adara sitting beside a fire, well rimmed with stones to prevent the chance of a stray spark escaping. These woods, dry as they were, could go up easier than a barn full of last harvest's hay. She glanced at Perrin as he settled down near her. The Aiel looked young, but smelled of patience, inquisitiveness, and control. Wisdom. She did not ask why Perrin had come to her. She waited for him to speak. "Are you a dreamwalker?" Perrin asked. She studied him in the night. He had the distinct impression this was not a question a man, or an outsider, was supposed to ask. He was surprised then when she answered.
"No."
"Do you know much of it?" Perrin asked.
"Some."
"I need to know of a way to enter the world of dreams physically. Not just in my dreams, but in my real body. Have you heard of such a thing?" She inhaled sharply.
"Do not think of that, Perrin Ebarra. It is evil."
Perrin frowned. Strength in the wolf dream, in Talionriad, was a delicate thing. The more strongly Perrin put himself into the dream, the more solidly there he was, the easier he found it to change things there, manipulate that world. That came at a risk, however. Going into the dream too strongly, he risked cutting himself off from his sleeping body in the real world. That apparently didn't bother Slayer. Slayer was strong there, so very strong. The man was in the dream physically. Perrin was increasingly sure of it.
"Our contest will not end," Perrin thought, "until you are the prey, Slayer. hunter of wolves. I will end you.
In many ways, Adara muttered, looking at him, you are still a child, for all the honor you have found. Perrin had grown accustomed to, though not fond of, women who looked not a year or two older than he was, addressing him so. None of the dreamwalkers will teach you this thing. It is evil.
Why is it evil? Perrin said.
To enter into the world of dreams in the flesh costs you part of what makes you human. What's more, if you die while in that place, and you are in the flesh, it can make you die forever. No more rebirth, Perrin Ibarra. Your thread in the pattern could end forever. You yourself destroyed. This is not a thing you should contemplate.
The servants of the shadow do this, Adara, Perrin said. They take these risks to dominate. We need to take the same risks in order to stop them.
Adara hissed softly, shaking her head.
Do not cut off your foot for fear that a snake will bite it, Perrin Ibarra. Do not make a terrible mistake because you fear something that seems worse. This is all I will say on the topic.
She stood and left him sitting by the fire.
Chapter 13. What Must Be Done. The army split before Egwene as she rode forward toward the hills in southeastern Kandor, where they would shortly engage the advancing enemy. She led over 100 Aes Sedai, many of them from the Green Aja. Bryn's tactical revisions had been quick and efficient. He had something better than archers for breaking a charge, something more destructive than heavy cavalry for causing sheer damage. It was time to use it. Two other smaller forces of Aes Sedai made their way to the flanks of the army. These hills might once have been lush and green. Now they were yellow and brown as if burned by sunlight. She tried to see the advantages. At least they would have sure footing, and though the sky broke with periodic lightning, rain seemed unlikely. The approaching Trolloc seemed to extend forever in either direction. Though Egwene's army was enormous, it suddenly felt tiny. Fortunately, Egwene had a single advantage. The Trolloc army was driven by a need to continue moving forward. Trolloc armies fell apart if they were not constantly advancing. They'd start bickering. They'd run out of food. Egwene's army was a barrier in their way, and bait. The Shadow Spawn couldn't afford to leave such a force as theirs at large, and so Egwene would draw them along a course she determined. Her Aes Sedai reached the battlefront. Bryn had split his army into large, highly mobile strike units to hit the Trollocs wherever and whenever they showed vulnerability. The offensive structure of Bryn's forces seemed to confuse the Trollocs. At least, that was how Egwene read the shuffling in their ranks, the churning movement, the increase of noise. Trollocs rarely had to worry about being on the defensive. Trollocs attacked, humans defended. Humans worried, humans were food. Egwene reached the top of a low hill, looking out at the plain in Kandor where the Trollocs amassed, her Aes Sedai arraying in a long line to either side of her. Behind them, the men of the army seemed uncertain. They knew Egwene and the others were Aes Sedai, and no man was comfortable around Aes Sedai. Egwene reached to her side and slipped something long, white, and slender from the leather case tied to her belt. A fluted rod. Vora's Sa'angreal. It felt comfortable in her hand. Familiar. Though she had only used this Sa'angreal once, she felt as if it had claimed her and she it. During the fight against the Shanshan, this had been her weapon. For the first time, she understood why a soldier might feel a bond with his sword. The glow of the power winked on around the women in the line, like a row of lanterns being lit. Egwene embraced the source and felt the one power flow into her like a waterfall, filling her and opening her eyes. The world became sweeter, the scents of oil from armor and of beaten grass growing stronger. Within the embrace of Sayadar, she could see the signs of color that the shadow wanted them to ignore. The grass wasn't all dead. There were tiny hints of green, slivers where the grass clung to life. There were voles beneath it. She could now easily make out the ripples in the earth. They ate at the dying roots and clung to life. Smiling widely, she pulled the one power through the fluted rod. Within that torrent, she was atop a sea of strength and energy, riding a lone vessel and embracing the wind. The Trollocs finally surged into motion. They roared, a huge rush of weapons, teeth, stink, and eyes that were too human. Perhaps the Murdral had seen Aes Sedai up front and thought to attack and destroy the human channelers. The other women waited for Egwene's sign. They were not in a circle. A circle was best for one focused, precise stream of the one power. That wasn't the goal today. The goal today was simply to destroy. Once the Trollocs were halfway to the hills, Egwene began her offensive. She'd always been unusually strong in earth, so she led with the most simple and destructive of weaves. She sent threads of earth into the ground beneath the Trollocs in a long line, then heaved it up. With the aid of Vora's Sa'angreal, it felt as easy as tossing a handful of pebbles into the air. At this sign, the entire line of women formed weaves. The air rippled with glowing threads, pure streams of fire, of earth to heave, of gusts of wind to blow the Trollocs into one another and make them trip and tumble. The Trollocs that Egwene had thrown into the air toppled back to the ground, many of them missing legs or feet. Bones broke, and Trollocs screamed in agony as their fellows fell upon them. Egwene let the second rank stumble across the fallen, then struck again. This time she didn't focus on the earth, but on metal. Metal in armor, in weapons, and on wrists. She shattered axes and swords, mail and the occasional breastplate. This released fragments of metal with deadly speed. The air grew red with spraying blood. The next ranks tried to stop to avoid the shrapnel, but the Trollocs behind them had too much momentum. They shoved their fellows forward into the zone of death and trampled them. Egwene also killed the next wave with exploding metal. It was harder than casting up the earth, but it also didn't give as much sign to the back ranks, so she was able to continue killing without them realizing what they were doing by shoving their fellows forward. Then Egwene returned to rupturing the earth. There was something energizing about using raw power, sending weaves in their most basic forms. In that moment, maiming, destroying, bringing death upon the enemy, she felt as if she were one with the land itself, that she was doing the work it had longed for someone to do for so long. The blight and the shadow spawn it grew were a disease, an infection. Egwene, a fire with the one power, a blazing beacon of death and judgment, was the cauterizing flame that would bring healing to the land. The Trollocs tried hard to push through the Aes Sedai weaves, but that only put more and more of them into the White Tower's reach. The Greens lived up to their Aja's reputation, releasing wave after wave of destruction at the Trollocs, but the other Aja's did well also. The ground trembled, and the air clogged with the howls of the dying. Bodies ripped, flesh burned. Not a few of the soldiers in the front lines emptied their stomachs at the sight, and still the Aes Sedai pounded the Trolloc lines. Specific sisters sought out Murdral, as they had been ordered. Egwene struck one herself, ripping its eyeless head from its neck with a weave of fire and air. Each fade they killed dropped fists of Trollocs linked to them. Egwene doubled her attack. She hit a rank with a wave of exploding earth, then slammed a wave of air into the bodies as they fell, pushing them back so they dropped onto the ranks behind. She ripped holes in the earth and made the stones and the ground explode. She butchered Trollocs for what seemed like hours. Finally, the shadow spawn broke, the Trollocs pulling back despite the whips of the Murdral. Egwene took a deep breath. She was starting to feel limp, and struck down more fades. Finally, they too broke and fled back away from the hills. Egwene sagged in her saddle, lowering her Sa'angreal. She wasn't sure exactly how much time had passed. The soldiers nearby stared, wide-eyed. Their blood had not been required this day. "That was impressive," Gawain said, pulling his horse up beside hers. It was as if they were assaulting city walls, trying to run ladders to a siege, only without the walls or the ladders. "They'll return," Egwene said tiredly. "We killed just a small percentage of them. On the morrow, or the day after at the latest, they would try again. New tactics, perhaps. They might spread out waves of attackers to make it more difficult for the Aes Sedai to kill large batches of them at once." "We surprised them," Egwene said. "They will come stronger next time. For now, for this night, we've held." "You didn't just hold, Egwene," Gawain said with a smile. "You sent them running. I don't know that I've ever seen an army so thoroughly trounced." The rest of the army seemed to agree with Gawain's assessment, for they began to cheer, raising weapons. Egwene forced back her fatigue and tucked away the fluted rod. Nearby, other Aes Sedai lowered small statues, bracelets, brooches, rings, and rods. They had emptied the White Tower's storehouse of every Angreal and Sa'angreal, the few of those they had, and distributed them among the sisters on the battlefront. At the end of each day, they would be collected and delivered to the women providing healing. The Aes Sedai turned and rode back through the cheering army. The time for sorrows would unfortunately come. The Aes Sedai could not fight each battle. For now, however, Egwene was content to let the soldiers enjoy their victory, for it was the very best kind, the kind that left no holes in their ranks.
"The Lord Dragon and his scouts have begun to reconnoiter Sheol Ghul."
Bashir pointed to one of the shaded maps.
"Our resistance in Kandor and Shinar is forcing the Shadow to commit more and more troops to those fights. Soon the blasted lands will be mostly empty, save for a skeleton force of defenders. He will be able to strike more easily then."
Elaine nodded. She could feel Rand somewhere in the back of her mind. He was worried about something, though he was too distant for her to feel more than that. He occasionally visited her at her camp in the Brame Wood, but for now he was on one of the other battlefronts. Bashir continued.
"The Ammerlin should be able to hold in Kandor considering the number of channelers she has. I'm not worried about her."
"But you are about the Borderlanders," Elaine said.
"Yes. They've been pushed out of Tarwyn's Gap."
"I wish they had been able to hold where they were, but they've been overwhelmed. There is nothing to be done for it save siphon to them what aid we can." Bashir nodded.
"Perhaps Lord Mandragoran could reverse his retreat if he had more Aes Sedai or Ashaman."
Of which there were none to spare. She had sent him some Aes Sedai from Egwene's army to help him with his initial retreat, and that had helped. But if Rand himself couldn't fight off the dreadlords there... "Lord Agilmar will know what to do," Elaine said. "The Light willing, he'll be able to pull the Trollocs away from more populated areas." Bashir grunted.
"A retreat like this, almost a rout, usually affords no chance for directing the course of battle."
Bashir pointed toward the map of Shinar. Elaine studied it. The path of the Trollocs would not avoid inhabited land, Faldara, Mos Shirare, Falmaran, and with dreadlords, city walls would be useless. "Send word to Lan and the lords of Shinar," she said quietly. "Order Faldara and Angkor Dail burned, along with Falmaran and villages like Mado. They're already burning what farmland they can, emptying the cities as well. Evacuate the civilians to Tar Valon.
I'm sorry,
Bashir said softly. It is what must be done, isn't it?
Yes,
Bashir said. Light, what a mess. Well, what did you expect? Neatness and simplicity? Footsteps on the leaves announced Talmanis approaching with one of his commanders. The Kyrian inn looked tired. Everyone did. A week of battle was only the beginning, but the thrill of the fight was dying. Now came the real work of the war. Days fighting or waiting to fight, nights spent sleeping with sword in hand. Elaine's current location in the wood, she'd begun the morning 1,000 paces further south, but their constant retreat through the forest kept her moving, was ideal. 3 small streams with easy access, room for plenty of troops to camp, trees atop the hill that worked as well as watchtowers. A pity they'd have to leave this site behind in the morning.
The Trollocs control the entire southern section of the forest, Bashir said, knuckling his mustaches. They are avoiding the clearings. That means our cavalry won't be able to operate efficiently.
The dragons are practically useless in here, Your Majesty, Talmanis said, entering the tent. Now that the Trollocs are keeping off the roadways, we have trouble doing any damage. It's nearly impossible to maneuver the dragon carts in the forest, and when we do get a shot, we kill more trees than we do shadow spawn.
What if that, whatever it was that Aludra was talking about?
Her dragon teeth, Talmanis said. It's better. The dragon shoots out a bunch of bits of metal rather than one ball. It has a big spread to it, and works reasonably well inside the forest. But I maintain that the dragons are doing less damage than it is worth risking them to achieve.
I think that the forest has done us the good it can, Bashir said, moving some Trolloc tokens on their maps. We have whittled down their numbers, but they're getting smart, keeping to the thick woods and trying to surround us.
Suggestions?
Pull back, Bashir said. Head out to the east of here. Make for the Arinin? There's no bridge this far north, Talmanis said.
Bashir nodded.
So you know what I'm going to ask. You have a company of men who can build bridges. Send them with some of your dragons for protection and have them build raft bridges directly east of us. The rest of us won't be far behind. The open terrain there will give our cavalry and the dragons the chance to do more damage. We can rely on the Arinin to slow the Trollocs, especially once we torch the bridges. A few dragons placed there should slow their progress. We'll continue east to the Alguenya and repeat the process. Then we'll be on the road to Kyrian. We'll head north, and when we find a suitable place to make a stand, I think I know just the spot, we'll turn and face the shadow with Kyrian at our backs.
Surely you don't think we'll need to go all that way? Elaine said. Bashir stared at the map, squinting, as if seeing through the parchment itself to the land it depicted.
We're stirring this battle, he said softly, but we don't control it. We're riding it, as a man might ride a stampeding horse. I can't say where the gallop will stop. I'll divert it. I'll send it through patches of thorns, but I can't stop it. Not so long as the Trollocs keep coming.
Elaine frowned. She couldn't afford an endless retreat. She needed to defeat these shadow spawn as soon and as thoroughly as possible, so she could join the remainder of her forces to Lan's and Egwene's armies to beat back the invasions from the north. That was the only way they'd win. Otherwise, it wouldn't matter what Rand was able to do against the Dark One. Light, what a mess. Do it.
Perrin rested his hammer on his shoulder, listening as the sweating young messenger relayed Elaine's orders. A gentle breeze blew through the branches of the forest behind. The Ogier fought in there. He'd worried they would refuse to endanger the trees. But their fighting... Light. Perrin had never seen savagery to rival it. "These tactics aren't bad," Tam said, reading the orders. "The Queen has a good head for warfare." Perrin waved away the messenger boy. He passed Galad and several of his white cloak commanders, conferring nearby.
"She listens well to those who know their tactics," Perrin said, "and she doesn't interfere."
"That's what I meant, lad," Tam said with a smile.
"Being in charge isn't always about telling people what to do. Sometimes it's about knowing when to step out of the way of people who know what they're doing."
"Wise words, Tam," Perrin said, turning northward.
"I suggest you adopt them, as you have command now."
Perrin could see Rand. The colors swam. Rand, speaking with Moraine on a bleak rocky ridge he did not recognize. They were almost ready for the invasion of Shael Ghul. Perrin felt a tug from Rand, growing stronger. Soon Rand would need him.
"Perrin?" Tam asked. "What's this nonsense about command?"
"You have our forces, Tam," Perrin said. "The men are working together now. Let Arganda, Galen, and Galad assist you." Nearby, Grady held an open gateway through which the wounded from the most recent skirmish were being sent for healing. Barilane ran the hospital on the other side, which the Yellow Aja had placed in Mayenne. The air coming from the other side was warm.
"I don't know if they'll listen to me, Perrin," Tam said. "I'm just a common farmer."
"They listened to you well enough before."
"That was when we were traveling the wilderness," Tam said. "You were always nearby. They answered to me on your authority."
He rubbed his chin.
"I have a feeling, from the way you keep looking north, that you don't intend to be here much longer."
"Rand needs me," Perrin said softly.
"Burn me, Tam, I hate it. But I can't fight along with you here in Andor. Someone needs to watch Rand's back, and it... well, it's going to be me. I know it somehow."
Tam nodded.
"We'll just go to Arganda or Galen and tell them they're in charge of our men. Queen Elaine is giving most of the orders anyway, and..."
"Men!"
Perrin yelled, looking toward the assembled soldiers. Arganda was consulting with Galen. They turned to Perrin, as did the nearby members of the Wolf Guard, along with Galad and his white cloaks. Young Bornhold regarded Perrin through dark eyes. That one grew more and more unpredictable lately. The lights and Galad had been able to keep him from the brandy.
"You all accept my authority, as granted by the Crown of Andor?"
Perrin asked.
"Of course, Lord Golden Eyes," Arganda called. "I thought that was established."
"I'm hereby making Tam Al-Thor a lord," Perrin called. "I'm making him steward over the two rivers in the name of his son, the Dragon Reborn. He carries all of my authority, which is the dragon's own authority. If I do not survive this battle, Tam succeeds me."
The camp grew still, then the men nodded, several saluting Tam. Tam groaned so softly, Perrin doubted anyone else could hear.
"Is it too late to turn you over to the women's circle for a good talking to?" Tam asked. "Maybe a sound swat on the behind, and a week spent carrying water for Widow Althorn?"
"Sorry, Tam," Perrin said.
"Niald, try making a gateway to the Black Tower."
The young Ashaman adopted a look of concentration.
"It still doesn't work, Lord Golden Eyes."
Perrin shook his head. He'd heard the reports from Land's battlefront that members of the Black Tower were fighting for the Shadow. Something had happened there. Something terrible.
"All right. Back to Marilor, then," Perrin said.
Niald nodded, concentrating. As he worked, Perrin turned to the men.
"I hate to leave you, but I have these hooks in me, pulling me north. I have to go to Rand. And there's just no arguing with it. I'll try to come back. If I can't, well, I want you all to know that I'm proud of you, all of you. You're welcome in my home when this is over. We'll open a cask or two of Master Elvire's best brandy. We'll remember those who fell, and we'll tell our children how we stood when the clouds turned black and the world seemed to die. We'll tell them we stood shoulder to shoulder, and there was just no space for the shadow to squeeze through.
He raised Mahalanir toward them, and he bore their cheering. Not because he deserved it, but because they certainly did. Niald opened the gateway. Perrin started toward it, then hesitated as his name was called. He frowned, looking at Dane Bornhold, as the man hurried over. Perrin rested his hand on his hammer, wary. This man had saved his life against the Trollocs and against a fellow Whitecloak. But Perrin saw the dislike the man had for him. He might not blame Perrin for the death of his father, but that didn't mean he liked or even accepted Perrin.
"A word, Ibarra,"
Bornhold said, looking toward Gaul standing nearby.
"In private?"
Perrin waved Gaul away, and the Aiel reluctantly retreated. He stepped with Bornhold away from the open gateway.
"What is this about? If it's because of your father..."
"Light, just be quiet,"
Bornhold said, glancing away.
"I don't want to see this. I hate saying this. But you need to know. Light, burn me, you need to know."
"Know what?"
"Ibarra,"
Bornhold said, taking a deep breath.
"It wasn't Trollocs who killed your family."
A shock went through Perrin's body.
"I'm sorry,"
Bornhold said, looking away.
"It was Ordeath. Your father insulted him. He tore apart the family, and we blamed the Trollocs. I didn't kill them, but I didn't say anything. So much blood."
"What?"
Perrin grabbed the white cloak by the shoulder.
"But they said... I mean..."
"Light, he dealt with this already." The look in Bornhold's eyes when his met Perrin's dredged it all up again. The pain, the horror, the loss, the fury. Bornhold reached up and took Perrin's wrist, then yanked it free of his shoulder.
"This is an awful time to tell you this, I know,"
Bornhold said.
"But I couldn't keep it in. I just... We may fall. Light, it might all fall. I had to speak, to say it."
He pulled away, moving back toward the other white cloaks with eyes downcast. Perrin stood alone, his entire world shaking. Then he pulled it back together. He had dealt with this. He had mourned his family. It was over. Through. He could and would go on. Light, the old hurts returned, but he shoved them down and turned his eyes toward the gateway. Toward Rand and his duty. He had work to do. But Ordeath, Padon Fane, this only added to that man's terrible crimes. Perrin would see that he paid, one way or another. He approached the gateway to travel to find Rand, where he was joined by Gaul.
"I'm going to a place you cannot, my friend,"
Perrin said softly, his pain subsiding.
"I'm sorry."
"You'll go to the dream within a dream," Gaul said, then yawned.
"Turns out I'm tired."
"But I'm coming, Perrin Ibarra. Kill me if you wish me to remain behind."
Perrin didn't dare push him on it. He nodded. Perrin glanced behind him, raising his hammer once more. As he did so, he caught a glimpse through the other gateway, the one to Mayenne that Grady still held open. Inside, two white-robed forms watched Gaul. He raised a spear to them. How must it feel for a pair of warriors to wait out this, the last battle? Perhaps Rand should have tried to have the Gaishan released from their vows for a few weeks. Well, that probably would have turned every single Aiel against him. Like protect the wetlander who dared tamper with Chieto. Perrin ducked through the gateway, stepping onto the ground of Marilor. From there, he and Gaul packed as if for a long trip. Foodstuffs and water aplenty, as much as they dared carry. It took Perrin the better part of a half hour to convince Rand Zashimon to tell him where their leader had gone. Finally, a grudging naif opened a gateway for Perrin. He left Marilor and stepped out into what seemed to be the Blight. Only the rocks were cold. The air smelled of death, of desolation. The fetor took Perrin aback, and it was minutes before he could sort out normal sense from the stench. Rand stood just ahead, at the edge of a ridge, arms folded behind his back. A group of his advisors, commanders and guards, stood behind, including Moiraine, Avienda, and Cadswain. At this moment, though, Rand stood alone at the edge of the ridge. Distant, in front of them, rose the peak of Shale Ghul. Perrin felt a shiver. It was distant, but Perrin could not mistake the intense determination in Rand's expression as he regarded the peak.
"Light," Perrin said. "Is it time?"
"No," Rand said softly. "This is a test, to see if he senses me."
"Perrin?"
Nynaeve asked from the hillside behind. She had been speaking with Moiraine, and for once she didn't smell a twinge hateful. Something had happened between those two women.
"I only need him for a moment,"
Perrin said, walking up to join Rand at the end of the outcropping of rock. There were some Aiel back there, and Perrin didn't want them, particularly any wise ones, to hear what he was going to ask Rand.
"You have this moment and many, Perrin," Rand said. "I owe you dearly. What is it you want?"
"Well..." Perrin looked over his shoulder. Would Moiraine or Nynaeve know enough to try to stop him? Probably. Women were always trying to keep a man from doing what he must, as if worried he'd break his neck. Never mind that it was the last battle.
"Perrin?" Rand asked. "Rand, I need to enter the wolf dream."
"Talionriad?" Rand said.
"Perrin, I don't know what you do there. You've told me little. I figured that you would know how to..."
"I know how to enter it one way," Perrin said, whispering so that the wise ones and the others behind couldn't hear.
"The easy way. I need something else. You know things. You remember things. Is there anything in that ancient brain of yours that remembers how to enter into the world of dreams in the flesh?"
Rand grew solemn.
"It's a dangerous thing, you ask. As dangerous as going to do what you're about to do?"
"Perhaps." Rand frowned.
"If I'd known back when I... Well, let's just say that some would call your request very, very evil." "It's not evil, Rand," Perrin said. "I know something evil when I smell it. This isn't evil. It's just incredibly stupid."
Rand smiled. "And still you ask?"
"The good options are gone, Rand. Better to do something desperate than do nothing at all."
Rand didn't reply.
"Look," Perrin said. "We've spoken of the Black Tower. I know you're worried about it."
"I need to go there," Rand said, expression darkening. "And yet it's obviously a trap."
"I think I know part of what is to blame," Perrin said. "There's someone I need to face, and I can't beat him without being able to face him on equal terms. There, in the dream."
Rand nodded slowly.
"The wheel weaves as the wheel wills. We will have to leave the blasted lands. You cannot enter the dream from..."
He trailed off, then did something, crafting a weave. A gateway opened beside him. Something about it was different from ordinary ones.
"I see," Rand said.
"The worlds are drawing together, compressing. What was once separate is no longer so. This gateway will take you into the dream. Take care, Perrin. If you die in that place while in the flesh, it can have... ramifications. What you face could be worse than death itself, particularly now, at this time."
"I know,"
Perrin said.
I will need a way out. Can you have one of your Ashaman make one of these gateways once a day at dawn? Say, at the traveling grounds of Merilor?
Dangerous, Rand whispered, but I will do it. Perrin nodded in thanks. The light willing, we will see one another again, Rand said. He held out his hand to Perrin.
Watch out for Matt. I'm honestly not sure what he's going to do, but I have a feeling it will be highly dangerous for all involved.
Not like us, Perrin said, clasping Rand's forearm.
You and I, we're much better at keeping to the safe paths.
Rand smiled. May the light shelter you, Perrin Ibarra.
And you, Randall Thor.
Perrin hesitated and realized what was happening. They were saying goodbye. He took Rand in an embrace.
You take care of him, you two,
Perrin said, looking toward Nynaeve and Moiraine as he pulled back from the embrace.
You hear me?
Oh, now you want me to watch over Rand? Nynaeve said, hands on her hips. I don't believe I ever stopped, Perrin Ibarra. Don't think I didn't hear you two whispering over there. You're doing something foolish, aren't you?
Always,
Perrin said, raising a hand in farewell to Tom.
Gaul, you certain you want to do this?
I am,
the Aielman said, loosening his spears and looking through Rand's gateway. Without another word, the two hefted their heavy packs and stepped into the world of dreams. Chapter 14 Doses of Fork Root.
Light,
Perrin whispered to Gaul, looking across the landscape.
It's dying.
The boiling, threshing, churning black sky of the wolf dream was nothing new, but the storm that the sky had been foreshadowing for months had finally arrived. Wind blew in enormous gusts, moving this way, then that, in unnatural patterns. Perrin closed his cloak, then strengthened it with a thought, imagining the ties holding it to be fixed strongly in place. A little bubble of calmness extended out from him, deflecting the worst of the winds. It was easier than he anticipated, as if he'd reached for a heavy piece of oak and found it as light as pine. The landscape seemed less real than it usually did. The raging winds actually smoothed out hills, like erosion at high speed. In other places, the land swelled up, forming ripples of rock and new hillsides. Chunks of earth sprayed into the air, shattering. The land itself was coming apart. He grabbed Gaul's shoulder and shifted the two of them away from the place. It was too close to Rand, Perrin suspected. Indeed, as they appeared on the familiar plain to the south, the place where he'd hunted with Hopper, they found the storm less powerful. They stowed their heavy packs, laden with food and water, in a thicket of bushes. Perrin didn't know if they could survive on food or water found in the dream, but he didn't want to have to find out. They should have enough here for a week or so, and as long as they had a gateway waiting for them, he felt comfortable, or at least satisfied, with the risks he was taking here. The landscape here wasn't coming apart in the same way as it had been near Shale Ghul. However, if he watched a section long enough, he could catch bits of, well, everything being pulled up in the winds. Stalks of dead grain, fragments of tree trunks, gobs of mud and slivers of rock. All were slowly being pulled toward those gluttonous black clouds. After the way of the wolf dream, when he looked back, things that had been broken apart would often be whole again. He understood. This place was being consumed slowly, as was the waking world. Here it was simply easier to see. The winds whipped at them, but weren't so strong that he had to keep them at bay. They felt like the winds at the beginning of a storm, right before the rain and lightning, the heralds of oncoming destruction. Gaul had pulled the shufa over his face and looked about suspiciously. His clothing had changed in shade to match the grasses.
You have to be very careful here, Gaul, Perrin said.
Your idle thoughts can become reality.
Gull nodded, then hesitantly unveiled his face.
I will listen and do as instructed.
It was encouraging that Gull's clothing didn't change too much as they walked through the field.
Just try to keep your mind clear, Perrin said. Free of thought. Act by instinct, and follow my lead.
I will hunt like the Gara, Gull said, nodding.
My spear is yours, Perrin Ebarra.
Perrin walked through the field, worried that Gull would accidentally send himself somewhere by thinking of it. The man barely suffered any effects of the wolf dream, however. His clothing would change a little if he was startled, his veil snapping into place without him reaching for it, but that seemed to be the extent of it.
All right, Perrin said. I'm going to take us to the Black Tower. We hunt a dangerous prey, a man named Slayer. You remember Lord Luke?
The lupin guinea, Gull said.
Perrin frowned.
It is a type of bird, Gull said, from the Threefold Land. I did not see this man often, but he seemed to be the type who talked big but was inwardly a coward.
Well, that was a front, Perrin said. And either way, he is a very different person in the dream. Here he is a predator named Slayer, who hunts wolves and men. He's powerful. If he decides to kill you, he can appear behind you in an eye blink and imagine you captured by vines and unable to move. You'll be trapped as he slits your throat.
Gull laughed.
That's funny, Perrin asked.
You act as if this is something new, Gull explained.
Yet in the first dream, wherever I go, I am surrounded by women and men who could tie me in air with a thought and kill me at any time. I am accustomed to being powerless around some, Perrin Ebarra. It is the way of the world in all things.
Still, Perrin said sternly, if we find Slayer, he's a square-faced fellow with eyes that don't seem totally alive, and he dresses in dark leather. I want you to stay away from him. Let me fight him.
But you said you'd obey, Gull, Perrin said. This is important. He took Hopper. I won't have him taking you as well. You don't fight Slayer.
Very well, Gull said. I give my oath on it. I will not dance the spears with this man unless you order it.
Perrin sighed, imagining Gull standing with his spears put away, letting Slayer kill him because of this oath. Light but Aiel could be prickly.
You can fight him if he attacks you, Perrin said, but only as a means of escape. Don't hunt him. And if I'm fighting him, stay out of the way, understand?
Gull nodded. Perrin put a hand on the Aiel's shoulder, then shifted them in the direction of the Black Tower. Perrin had never been there before, so he had to guess and try to find it. The first shift was off, taking them to a section of Andor where grass-covered hills seemed to dance in the churning winds. Perrin would have preferred to just leap from hilltop to hilltop, but he didn't think Gull was ready for that. He used shifting instead. After 4 or 5 tries, Perrin took them to a place where he spotted a translucent, faintly purple dome rising in the distance.
What is it? Gull asked. Our goal, Perrin said. That is the thing keeping Grady and Niald from creating gateways to the Black Tower. Just as we were afflicted in Gildan. Yes.
Seeing that dome brought back memories, vivid ones, of wolves dying. Perrin suppressed them. Memories like that could lead to idle thoughts here. He allowed himself a burning anger deep within, like the warmth of his hammer. But that was all.
Let's go,
Perrin said, shifting them down in front of the dome. It looked like glass.
Pull me free if I collapse, he said to Gull, then stepped into the barrier.
It felt as if he'd hit something incredibly cold. It sucked away his strength. He stumbled, but he kept his mind on his goal. Slayer, killer of wolves, Hopper's murderer. Perrin straightened as his strength returned. This was easier than it had been last time. Being in the wolf dream in the flesh did make him stronger. He didn't have to worry about pulling himself into the dream too strongly and leaving his body to die in the real world. He moved slowly through the barrier, as if through water, and stepped out onto the other side. Behind, Gaul reached out with a curious expression on his face, then tapped the dome with his index finger. Gaul immediately dropped to the ground, going limp like a doll. His spears and arrows tumbled away from his body, and he lay perfectly still, his chest not rising. Perrin reached through, his arms slow, and seized Gaul by the leg to pull him through. Once on the other side, Gaul gasped, then rolled over, groaning. He sat up, holding his head. Perrin quietly fetched the man's arrows and spears for him.
"This is going to be a good experience for building our G," Gaul said.
He stood up and rubbed his arm where he'd hit the ground.
"The wise ones call coming to this place as we do evil. It seems to me they would enjoy bringing men here to teach them."
Perrin eyed Gaul. He hadn't realized that the man had heard him speaking to Adara of the wolf dream.
"What did I do to deserve your loyalty, Gaul?"
Perrin said, mostly to himself. Gaul laughed.
"It is not anything you did." "What do you mean? I cut you down from that cage. That's why you follow me."
"That's why I began following you," Gaul said.
"It is not why I remained. Come, is there not a danger that we hunt?"
Perrin nodded, and Gaul veiled his face. Together they walked beneath the dome, approaching the structure within. It was a goodly distance from the edge of one of these domes to the center, but Perrin didn't want to jump and be surprised, so they continued on foot, crossing a landscape of open grasslands patched with groves of trees. They walked for about an hour before they spotted the walls. Tall and imposing, they looked like those around a large city. Perrin and Gaul walked up to them, Gaul scouting with great care, as if he expected to be fired upon at any moment. However, in the wolf dream, these walls wouldn't be guarded. If Slayer were in here, he would look at the heart of the dome, at the center, and he'd probably have laid a trap. Perrin rested his hand on Gaul's shoulder and brought them to the top of the wall in an instant. Gaul prowled to one side, crouching low and peeking into one of the covered guard posts. Perrin went to the inner edge of the wall, looking in. The Black Tower wasn't as imposing as the outside implied. A distant village of huts and small houses, and beyond that, a large building project.
"They're arrogant, wouldn't you say?"
a feminine voice asked. Perrin jumped, spinning, summoning his hammer to his hands and readying a brick wall around himself for protection. A short young woman with silver hair stood next to him, standing straight as if to try to appear taller than she was. She wore white clothing, tied at the waist with a silver belt. He didn't recognize the face, but he did know her scent.
"Moon Hunter," Perrin said, almost a growl. "Lanfear."
"I'm not supposed to use that name any longer," she said, tapping one finger on the wall. "He's so strict with names." Perrin backed away, glancing from side to side. Was she working with Slayer? Gaul appeared out of the guard post and froze, seeing her. Perrin held out a hand to stop him. Could he jump to Gaul and be away before she attacked?
"Moon Hunter?" Lanfear asked. "Is that what the wolves call me?"
"That's not right. Not at all.
I don't hunt the moon. The moon is mine already."
She leaned down, resting her arms on the chest-high battlement.
"What do you want?" Perrin demanded.
"Vengeance," she whispered. Then she looked at him. "The same as you, Perrin."
"I'm to believe you want Slayer dead, too?"
"Slayer? That orphan errand boy of Moradin's? He doesn't interest me. My vengeance will be against another."
"Who?"
"The one who caused my imprisonment," she said softly, passionately. Suddenly she looked toward the skies. Her eyes widened in alarm, and she vanished. Perrin passed his hammer from one hand to the other as Gaul crept forward, trying to watch all directions at once.
"What was that?"
he whispered.
"Aes Sedai?" "Worse,"
Perrin said with a grimace.
"Do the Aiel have a name for land fear?"
Gaul drew in a sharp breath.
"I don't know what she wants," Perrin said. "She's never made any sense to me. With any luck, we merely crossed paths, and she will go on with what she was about."
He didn't believe that, not after what the wolves had told him earlier. Moonhunter wanted him.
Light as if I didn't have enough trouble.
He shifted them down to the bottom of the wall, and they continued. Tovain knelt beside Loghain. Andril was forced to watch as she caressed his chin, his wearied eyes open and watching her with horror.
"It's all right," she said sweetly. "You can stop resisting. Relax, Loghain. Give in."
She had been turned easily. Apparently, linked with 13 half-men, it was easier for male channelers to turn female channelers, and vice versa. That was why they were having so much trouble with Loghain.
"Take him," Tobain said, pointing at Loghain. "Let's see this done, once and for all. He deserves the peace of the Great Lord's bounty."
Taim's minions dragged Loghain away. Andral watched with despair. Taim obviously considered Loghain a prize. Turn him and the rest of the Black Tower would go easily. Many of the boys up above would come willingly to their fate if Loghain ordered them to it.
"How can he keep fighting?" Andral thought.
Stately Amaran had been reduced to a whimpering wreck after only 2 sessions, though he hadn't yet been turned. Loghain had suffered nearly a dozen, and still he resisted. That would change, for Taim now had women. Soon after Tovain's turning, others had arrived, sisters of the Black Aja, led by a horridly ugly woman who spoke with authority. The other Reds who had come with Pavara had joined them. Drowsy concern flowed through Pavara's bond to Andral. She was awake, but full of that drink that stopped her from channeling. Andral's own mind felt relatively clear. How long had it been since they'd forced him to drink the dregs out of the cup they'd first given to Amaran?
"Loghain will not last much longer."
Pavara's sending was laced with fatigue and growing resignation.
"What are—"
She cut off, thoughts growing muddled.
"Burn me. What are we going to do?"
Loghain screamed in pain. He hadn't done that before. It seemed a very bad sign. By the doorway, Evan stood and watched. He looked over his shoulder suddenly, jumping at something.
"Light," Andral thought. "Could it be his madness caused by the taint? Is it still there?"
Andral noticed for the first time that he was shielded, which they never did to captives unless letting their dose of fork root wane so they could be turned. That sent a spike of panic through him. Were they coming for him next?
"Andral?"
Pavara sent.
"I have an idea."
"What?"
Andral started coughing through his gag. Evan jumped, then came over, bringing out his water flask and pouring water on the gag. Abors, one of Taim's flunkies, lounged against the wall. He was holding the shield. He glanced at Andral, but something at the other side of the room drew his attention. Andral coughed worse, so Evan untied the gag and rolled him to the side, letting him spit out the water.
"Quiet now,"
Evan said, glancing back at Abors, who was too far away to hear.
"Don't make them angry at you, Andral."
The turning of a man to the shadow was not perfect. While it changed their allegiance, it did not change everything about them. The thing in Evan's head had his memories, his personality, and, the light send, his failings.
"Have you convinced them?"
Andral whispered.
"Not to kill me."
"I have,"
Evan said, leaning low, eyes frenzied.
"They keep saying you're useless since you can't channel very well,
but none of them like making gateways to shuffle people about. I told them you'd do it for them. You will, won't you?
Of course, Andril said. It's better than dying.
Evan nodded.
They stopped your dose of fork root. They'll take you next, after Loghain. Mihail was finally sent new women from the Great Lord, women who aren't tired from channeling all the time. Them and Tovain and the Reds mean it should go quickly now. Mihail should have Loghain by the end of the day.
I'll serve them, Andril said. I'll swear to the Great Lord.
That's good, Andril, Evan said. But we can't let you go until you've been turned. Mihail won't accept just an oath.
It'll be all right. I told them that you'd turn easily. You will, won't you? Not resisting?
I won't resist.
Thank the Great Lord, Evan said, relaxing.
Oh, Evan, you were never terribly bright.
Evan, Andril said softly,
you need to watch out for Abors. You know that, right?
I'm one of them now, Andril, Evan said. I don't have to worry about them.
That's good, Andril whispered. What I heard him say about you must have been nothing.
Evan fidgeted. That look in his eyes, it was fright. The taint had been cleansed. Jonath, Imaran, and the other new Ashaman would never have to suffer the madness. It manifested differently in different Ashaman and at different rates. However, the fear was the most common. It came in waves. It had been consuming Evan when the cleansing happened. Andril had seen Ashaman need to be put down as the taint overwhelmed them. He knew that look in Evan's eyes well. Though the lad had been turned, he still carried the madness with him. He would do so forever.
What did he say? Evan said.
He didn't like it that you had been turned, Andril said. He thinks you'll take his place.
Oh.
Evan, he might be planning to kill you. Take care. Evan stood up.
Thank you, Andril.
He walked away, leaving Andril ungagged.
That can't possibly work, Pevara sent drowsily.
She hadn't lived among them long enough. She hadn't seen what the madness could do, and didn't know to recognize it in the eyes of the Ashaman. Normally, when one of them became like this, they would take him and confine him until he rode it out. If that didn't work, Taim added something to their wine, and they didn't wake up. If they weren't stopped, they would descend to destruction. They would kill those closest to them, lashing out first at people they should have loved. Andril knew that madness. He knew it was inside of him, too.
This is a mistake, Taim, he thought. You use our own friends against us, but we know them better than you do.
Evan struck at Abors. It came in a burst of the One Power. A second later, Andril's shield dropped. Andril embraced the source. He was not very strong, but he had enough power to burn away a few ropes. He rolled free of his bindings, hands bloodied, and took stock of the room. He hadn't been able to see it before. Not entirely. The room was bigger than he'd assumed, the size of a small throne room. A wide circular dais dominated the far end, topped by a double ring of Myrdral and women. He shivered as he saw the fades.
Light, but that eyeless gaze was awful.
Taim's exhausted men stood by the far wall, the Ashaman who had failed to turn Loghain. He sat on the dais, slouching and tied to a chair in the center of the double ring. Like a throne. Loghain's head rolled to the side, his eyes closed. He appeared to be whispering something. Taim had spun, furious, toward Evan, who fought with Mishrael beside Abor's smoking corpse. Evan and Mishrael each held the One Power, wrestling on the floor, a knife in Evan's hands. Andril scrambled toward Imaran, then nearly fell on his face as his legs gave out.
Light. He was weak, but he did manage to burn away Imaran's bonds, then Pavara's.
She shook her head, trying to clear it. Imaran nodded in gratitude.
Can you weave? Andril whispered.
Taim's attention was on Evan's fight. Imaran shook his head.
the drink they gave us.
Andral clung to the One Power. Shadows began to lengthen around him. No, he thought. No, not now. A gateway. He needed a gateway. Andral sucked in the One Power, forming the weave for traveling. And yet, as before, he hit some kind of barrier, like a wall preventing him from opening the gateway. Frustrated, he tried to make one to a closer destination. Perhaps distance mattered. Could he make a gateway to Candler's store above them? He struggled against that wall, fighting with everything he had. He strained, inching closer. He could almost do it. He felt as if something was happening.
"Please," he whispered. "Please open. We need to get out of here."
Evan fell to Taim's weave.
"What was that?"
Taim bellowed.
"I don't know," Mishrael said. "Evan attacked us. He had been talking to the page boy and..."
"Please," he whispered. "Please open. We need to get out of here."
Evan fell to Taim's weave.
"What was that?"
Taim bellowed.
"I don't know," Mishrael said. "Evan attacked us. He had been talking to the page boy and..."
Both spun toward Andral. Andral stopped trying to make the gateway, instead flinging a weave of fire in desperation toward Taim. Taim smiled. By the time Andral's tongue of fire reached him, it vanished into a weave of air and water that dissipated it.
"You are a persistent one," Taim said, slamming Andral against the wall with a weave of air.
Andral gasped in pain. Imoran stumbled dizzily to his feet, but a second wave of air knocked him down. Dazed, Andral felt himself hoisted up and pulled across the room. The ugly woman wearing black stepped out of the circle of Aes Sedai and walked up beside Taim.
"So, Mahail," she said, "you are not nearly as in control of this place as you indicated."
"I have inferior tools," Taim said. "I should have been given more women earlier."
"You ran your Ashaman to exhaustion," the woman replied. "You squandered their strength. I will take charge here."
Taim stood on the dais beside Loghain's slumped form, the women and the fades. He seemed to consider this woman, perhaps one of the Forsaken, a greater threat than anyone else in the room.
"You think that will work, do you?" Taim asked. "When the Nablus hears of how you are bungling..." "The Nablus? I care not for Moradin. I have already provided a gift to the great lord himself. Beware, I am in his favor. I hold the keys in my hands, Hesalam."
"You mean you actually did it? You stole them?"
Taim smiled. He turned back to Andral, who hung in the air, struggling without success. He wasn't shielded. He flung another weave at Taim, but the man blocked it indifferently. Andral wasn't even worth shielding. Taim dropped him from the weaves of air. Andral hit the ground hard. He grunted.
"How long have you trained here, Andral?" Taim asked. "You shame me. That is the best you can do when trying to kill?"
Andral struggled to his knees. He felt pain and worry from Pavara behind, her mind clouded with fork root. In front of him, Loghain sat on his throne, locked in place, surrounded by the enemy. The man's eyes were closed. He was barely conscious.
"We are done here," Taim said. "Mishrael, kill these captives. We will take those above and carry them to Shale Ghul. The Great Lord has promised me more resources for my work there."
Taim's lackeys approached. Andral looked up from his knees. The darkness grew all around, shapes moving in the shadows. The darkness. It terrified him. He had to let go of Sayadin. He had to. And yet, he could not. He had to begin weaving. Taim glanced at him, then smiled and wove balefire.
"Shadows all around."
Andral clung to the power.
"The dead. They come for me."
He wove by instinct, the best weave he knew. A gateway. He hit that wall. That blasted wall.
"So tired. Shadows. Shadows will take me,"